Everybody, welcome to another installment of Show to Be with Mike G, the show of life, the show of hiking, biking, traveling the world, whiskey, and so much more. I got to know Darren Comerford some months ago. I don't think it's been up to a year now, but he was working for Angels Envy, the Bacardi guys, and he's recently taken a job with Bev Ops at Patron. Great team over there, despite how y'all feel. You know, they're mates of mine, and I like the product. I really do, and Darren is a great addition to the team, both aesthetically and as a cocktail expert. How about that? So without further ado, I hope you enjoy this great chat with Darren Comerford of Patron.
I mean, no, because I think that there's a part that's like social media, it's, I mean, I feel like I post things, I put things online, but no, it's not, it wasn't like a specific, I think that there is some pieces, like, I don't think everything should go online, and it's kind of yeah. I think that weird mix of like, you know, people only post positive things, and so you, like, the skewed world, but also I'm not gonna post my worst day, that's not for yeah. everyone, too, so I don't know.
No, that's actually an interesting one, because I see a lot of, you know, I watch a lot of horror movies, okay? Mm-hmm. And there was this genre in the early 2000s, mid 2000s, Eli Roth kind of manned it, called torture porn, right?
Like, yeah.
And I'm not into that. I love movies and I'll watch them and shit. But there's something I think that's a little different now that I could call suffer porn, that people, yeah, right? That it's like, oh my God, everything sucks. It's so hard. Look at me suffering. I'm like, dude, I get it.
Yeah.
Everybody has a thing. But I try not to indulge in sharing all of that as well. And is that kind of a real, would you call it a boundary for you?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think that if it's like, if there's things that are like worth sharing, like I think like on the more adventure realm, it's like, yeah, here's the ups, here's the, like the highs, the lows and things. But yeah, I feel like that, yeah, it's mostly just, I think that I in my realm of like wanting to, what I want to share online, it's mostly just to entertain.
Yeah.
In the way that I want.
Does it reflect the person that you are? Because I know there's, rather I would presume, especially with your litany of photography since even the early or mid, late 2010s or whatever, that you are known as someone that captures other people.
Yeah, that to me is like a very, I mean, it really does feel like a gift to be able to share that with people. I mean, I think that hospitality in general is kind of the path I've been on, and it's kind of led from like bartending and, right. and working to photography. I mean, I think it's all, you know, all the jobs I've had have been making people feel good. You yes. know, I don't think I could be an auditor or something. You know, like I think that would really, really kill me. So it's nice that I think every single, like every job I've had has been, or and like a lot of passions have been based around that.
Yeah.
Like, you know,
would you call it hospitality in some I think a mild way of saying it sometimes is that it's kind of servitude.
Yeah.
Right. Do you enjoy the act of service itself?
Yeah. I think a lot of times I think it is really nice. Even like, you know, we had a little going away party in
Firehouse, right?
Yeah. I mean, it was amazing. And that there were so many amazing things that people were doing for me that night. And I was like, it's like, you know, like taking photos, and there's a whole dance, and there's like all these things, and it was almost this like, like, not that I haven't been at bars taking photos of other people. It's funny to then be on the receiving end, and it's
that is exactly the question I wanted to ask you.
Yeah,
right?
It is. It's a yeah. I mean, it was so special because and it, all, like all those things, but it also is there's like a weird feeling. It's like,
exactly. All right, you somehow tapped into my mind into what I was wanting to talk about. So, like, you know, when I think about interviews, right? I had a conversation this week with my ex-wife actually, and she's like, you know, I ask people questions all the time, and they never ask me back.
I'm like, yeah, that's how people are. But in my head, that's what I'm thinking, right? Yeah. And having done all these interviews. But you are always the capturer. You're always the person framing the scene, setting the aesthetic. Mm. It's a way to kind of be a subdued force in the aesthetic, right?
Yeah.
Warhol did that. Picasso did that. Anybody that paints subjects. So to flip it on Monday when you have this going away party where you have all this appreciation.
Yeah.
And all this outspilling gratitude towards you. Is that a place that you're comfortable with? That you're actually becoming the subject? You're the center of the focus.
Yeah. You know, I think I can. I think there's a weird part that's like you don't want to get too comfortable in that space.
Why is that?
Like it feels almost like selfish in a weird way. Not like there's so much like love there. It's more of just like it's nice to the reciprocity.
Yeah.
So it's interesting being on the other end, but I mean it is like it is so beautiful. Yeah.
I don't you know, I talked to, of course, we know Bjorn, you know.
Yeah.
There's a concept I discussed with him that's become important for me as I grow older. Because I don't have kids, you know, I've got a beautiful partner and all that, and I feel appreciation that way. For me, the easiest way for me to feel appreciation is through romantic love,
mm-hmm.
right? So when other people tell me they love me, it's like, wait, what? I don't get it. This doesn't compute, you know? But knowing that you've been around a while, you've been in hospitality for a long time, taking care of a lot of people. When people truly tell you that they appreciate you,
yeah,
is that something you really take in deeply? Or is it something like, oh, cool, thank you, right? There's this level of which you can kind of bring that appreciation in. And that was a conversation I had with Bjorn because people tell him a lot that they appreciate what he's doing, whether it's for the NA movement or for other things. And I still don't think he breathes it in.
Yeah,
I think he hears it, but he doesn't feel it.
Because I think, well, it feels like there's almost two parts where it's like for Bjorn, if you're talking about like a lot of the things that he's been doing, I don't want to speak to them, but like that those pieces and what he's talking about, especially with NA cocktails and right. sobriety and things like the people that means a lot.
Yes,
and it's like you're advocating who he is. He's advocating for a lot of things that people struggle with, or that it helps them kind of be a part
mm-hmm.
versus. Maybe just like I appreciate you for you know like bringing kindness or being, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. and I think that it's almost two separate things, it's interesting when you hear like if you're putting something out there, especially if it's right. something educational or something that means something, and people are like oh like they respond to that, especially if it's something as personal as like you know sobriety
is quite intimate, right? But that actually, you bring up a good point that there's really two facets to it, right? There is what you do for your work.
Yeah.
Because in a sense, I know sobriety is kind of who we are as well. And, you know, I'm drinking Angel's Envy, so I'm not sober, but I drink less than I used to. But then there's also the thing where it's like, I love what you do, but also you, I appreciate.
Yeah.
That's a little harder to strip out, right? And to breathe that in. At least for me, it is. But is that something that as you get older, you being in this industry, can you really like truly accept it and feel appreciated as a man, as Darren, not as what you do?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I do feel appreciated. It was an interesting thing. I mean, I have snacks here from when we did an event and, you know, buying candy and stuff. And it's like that to me as like a brand, like, cause I'm just leaving Angels,
yeah.
But like as a brand ambassador, I was going around throwing Capri Suns and candy at people and like, okay, is that my job? Well, yeah. But like, would I do that anyways? Yeah. Like that is just, that's like authentically how I want, you know, it's like coming. I go to bars and I've been a bartender forever. And like someone coming and throwing snacks at me, actually literally throwing snacks. Like that's a very fun and like lovely thing. So like, that's what I want to bring. And does it have anything to do with Angel's Envy? Well, no, but I mean, you like me, you like the whiskey, we can talk. It's to me, it's like being, it's authentic, I think, to who I am. And actually when I left Minnesota, we brought on, hired a buddy and we, you know, like, and it was kind of this like shoes to fill vibe. And it's like, well, when we were talking, it felt like this, well, this is how I do it.
Mm.
You don't have to you do it how you want to do it. How I like to do it is being silly, goofy, have a camera, have, you know, like candy, like all those things, expressions of, like kind of like, I guess showcasing, I don't know, value, but like that's what feels good to me.
Yeah. I love that. Well, and that's the thing is when we're gone.
Yeah. Right?
and I wrote about this recently, really all of it, our legacy, it's, you could say kids, you could say a business that you passed down or whatever, to normally to your kids, right? Angel's Envy is kind of an example to some extent, right? But
yeah,
all we are, and this is a positive thing for me, is this, the tales that people tell about us at the bar top.
Yeah.
You know, and that's kind of our legacy. And so far, what I've noticed about how people feel about you and how they talk about you is you've done a hell of a job being a positive force in a room.
Yeah.
Do you ever feel like you have to be on?
No, I don't feel that. I think, like, in general, when you're talking about, like, legacy, you know, it's interesting you think about how, you know, like, wars and things have started based on this, like, this legacy and this right, desire of being captured after you're gone. And, I think there's a lot of lakes and a lot of bridges named after, like, really awful people.
Yeah.
And so to me, it feels like I would much rather, it's like having those stories kind of fade than having, like, a park bench named after me.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I mean, those things are cool. If someone has a park bench, yeah, absolutely. but it's like the goal for me is not, it's like not building a life and conquering something to slap your name on it. It's more to, like, kind of have those stories and have that friendship and stuff. And that to me is really special.
Very special thing. So in this litany of topics of which I've kind of, again, I don't know why I was so obsessed with trying to, like, understand the Darren story.
I'm flattered, yeah.
You know? But it's funny. I get focused on something and I always want to know what motivates people. You know, that's kind of the thing. And one of the things I found fascinating, and correct me if these numbers are wrong, but you were able to take, was it 150 days off to do the Appalachian Trail? Is that the right number?
Yeah, yeah, 150. It took me 150 days, so it's like, what, 5 months?
Yeah. How many miles, roughly?
2,100, like, so 2,109.
Which
Yeah.
Incredible. And hearing some of the tales that you've had on the previous podcast about doing this
yeah,
trail is fine. Is hiking, that's not too reductive of a word, right? That's
no, yeah,
right.
No, it's the hiking trail, yeah.
Hiking trail. Because you did much of it alone, but I know you met up with people from what I understand, right? And in silence and in solemn and solitude of nature, what are the kinds of things that you think about?
Well, okay, so I think this is very much like when you have, like, a thought of, like, what it's like to go, it's like, yeah, 5 months hiking in the woods.
Yeah, yeah.
The reality is, I think I spent 3 nights sleeping alone.
Oh, is that all?
By choice.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I had to, you know, it was just for logistics or something. There was almost every night you're with people. Most of us go north to south. They call it the bubble. Mm-hmm. Most people go for weather. So you start in kind of, like, around the April time. So I was, like, in it at the peak time, and mm-hmm. so I saw people every single day. I wouldn't call it as much like wilderness. I've done, when I was younger, we did, like, more wilderness trips when you go out to more remote places. This was, you know, you had cell phone service for, like, the good chunk of the
time.
Oh,
really? Okay.
Yeah, and so
not incredibly remote, as I think.
No. You know, I think for parts of the trip, like, you could get margaritas within, like, a day or two. You know?
Really? Okay.
So it was funny, like, so, you know, some people, my journey was, like, I kind of wanted to go A to B and hike every mile. Some people kind of skipped around. All, you know, there's no wrong way to do it, because it's made up like everything else, you know, this trail. So to through hike it, it's, but that, yeah, the journey itself, it's, you know, I had a lot of people because, you know, it's, you're just walking all day. They call it the Green Tunnel. It's not the most exciting trail of the, like, long trails in the United States, but it is the most popular. And, you know, it was really like you hike for a few days, you get to a hostel, you take a shower, you crush beers, you eat as many hamburgers as you can, or whatever, and then you do that again. So it looks like it's just a big party, because it also can just be a big party. Mm-hmm. So I feel like there's like that.
I love that you're clarifying this.
Yeah, like, you know, because it is, I mean, it was profound in a way, but it also was, you're just a bum, mm-hmm. but it's like a socially acceptable version because you're walking. Because we'd go through these small towns and we were like celebrities, and the trail angels. So these people that would set up, like, you know, they'd grow hot dogs or give us beers or whatever, just because we were doing this. It was magical. I mean, it really was trail magic. And it's just funny, cause I'm like, all we're doing, like, we took time off work. Like, I don't have a job, you know, I have like, and we're just walking, and party. It's just a kind of a party, and it doesn't have to be, but you know, you walk all day, you get clean, and then you want to, like, you know, crush a few beers.
Yeah.
And then pack out like some Twisted Tea, because, you know, we're learning, like, carbonated beverages suck when they're warm, but like Twisted Tea is so much better, like, you know, 15 miles in.
What would you say is the most remote place that you've went?
Like in my life or like on the trail?
On the trail itself, and then we'll talk about travels here in a moment.
Yes, I think the most remote part is the 100-mile wilderness. That's towards the end. So is that Maine? I think that's in Maine.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and I mean, they call it like remote, and it's like, it was kind of this scary thing, because the other part of me, I didn't do any planning. Uh-huh. I had no research whatsoever about the
Wilderness
Trail.
I heard, like, you just said, they told you bring 3 days worth of food and the rest is covered,
yeah,
or something, right?
Yeah, so I kind of, and to me that was like part of the fun, is knowing that I didn't have to know. Because Chris McCandless, it wasn't that like Into the Wild thing.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
I wasn't, you know, it was like, I knew that I didn't have to know what was next, because right. There was no permits, there was people around, so I just didn't
feel unsafe necessarily.
Yeah, it was more of a, because I had friends and I knew people that have done it, and they're like, no, just show up,
yeah,
you're good.
Oh,
so
great.
Like the 100-mile wilderness was, you know, they talked that it was this 100 miles and like there's no way outs, and like there's still roads, you could do drops.
Yeah.
Someone did like a beer drop to another group, but yeah, you just pack extra food. It's different, because when you're been going for so long, you're used to like being able to get out in 2 days or, you know, whatever. But for this, it was like 100 miles, which would be like, you know, 3, 4, or 5 days,
right,
depending on how you're going. So it was remote, but it didn't feel crazy.
Has there been a time where it is you only, in your thoughts only, inter-reflection, introspection?
Yeah.
Because I watched a documentary, I think like Mostly Harmless, is that what it was? The HBO Max. Anyway, it's about trails, and there was a murderer, but he was cool to everybody, and then they found him dead, and they're like, oh yeah, he killed his wife. Anyway, but it's a very tight knit community of hikers and stuff. But that sounds, I think this sounds very positive, that it's mostly can be a very social thing.
Yeah.
Can it also be the inverse and the opposite, something that is solemn and introspective, where you go and you set out to a destination, maybe to get clarity in your mind, maybe to escape the world?
Yeah. I knew that, like, that trail, that I was craving that type. Before that, I did some hike. I did the Sapir hiking trail, which is like it was like 310 miles.
Where's that?
That goes from like right around Duluth, Minnesota,
okay,
all the way up to almost Canada.
Oh, wow.
So it follows the North Shore. I did that with some friends for part of it, and part of it solo. When I knew when I was like really wanted to be alone, I took my motorcycle around Lake Superior. So it was about a week. I brought a hammock. I just like camped. I did it all alone. I watched Ewan McGregor, Obi-Wan's. He did a whole a video. He did a whole series on like the long way round, long way down.
Mm-hmm.
Amazing. So I'm like watching that on my phone, and then reading and, you know, doing things. So I'm watching another adventure while being one. And that was like a very introspective. I think I came back from that and I quit my job, and it was like, it was, you know,
so it was
clarity.
Actually, it was an impetus for change for you.
Yeah. And I think a lot of those like adventure pieces, like kind of taking, I think a big part of my life has always been that, like, that finding adventure, or I guess finding the time to like make for that, you know, like I could have just easily moved to Austin, but like taking that break to hike the Appalachian Trail. And, you know, cause otherwise you get older and older, and I feel like, you know, like, can you remember the last like few years? Can you, like, if you think back, it kind of blends, but like, I bet you remember the vacations. I bet you remember like
Certainly.
Those important pieces.
Yeah. The things that punctuate our lives.
Yeah, so it's like, well, I want more punctuation. So it's like, let's make enough money so you can have an exclamation point once in a while.
But this travel bug, which I think is beautiful, or what I might call wanderlust, as far as back as at least I'm able to research.
Yeah.
And these are the places I think you visited. Tell me if this is wrong, but India, Siberia, Australia.
Yeah.
I mean, you've been relatively around the world, is that right?
Yeah, I haven't spent a lot of, I haven't really gone through like South America.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, kind of like through Europe and like parts of Asia. And
but some people, not you, not I, are scared to explore. They're scared to be in places that they don't understand and that they don't feel comfortable in. But for at least, again, what I was able to discern from your life, You've been traveling for a long time. Is that fair?
Yeah. Yeah, because my parents traveled a lot. My dad is an importer.
Oh.
So through his business, I mean, he was gone traveling through China, India, mm-hmm. Indonesia. So I got to, you know, I was like in like high school, went to China and like not like the most beautiful parts. Like we went and saw factories and
went to
India and like when I was probably 15, 16 years old. So I was able to do that. And so that definitely sparked this. I think like it was so normal to travel a lot.
Something that I find that positions us as children or young adults, you're saying 15, to crave more and to be curious is the openness of our parents.
Oh, yeah.
Did you ever, was that a contributing factor that, you know, your folks are like, well, we're just going to go wherever you felt that you needed to go everywhere, that you felt open to travel?
Definitely felt open. I feel like not so much a need. It was cool to have the context.
Mm.
So it was like I like going to India for the first time, like my older sibling went. And so it's like having that context already to know what was like about. It wasn't a complete mystery. And then you get to have your own experiences. And I think that a lot of that in the same realm of like the hiking, all these things is they're based off of these connections I make with someone else or the, and then talking, you gain some kind of knowledge that then I think opens that door.
Yeah.
Instead of, I feel like the other realm, I'm not so much a like spin the globe and be like, I'm going there.
So it's actually, would you say the word could be that it's relatively calculated where you, the moves that you take, the travel that you take?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, it's not so much random as it is. Yeah. Like I think a lot of the places that I've been there was a reason or there was some context before that was like, oh yeah, that sounds cool.
So to try to shift into what maybe one of your first photo gigs, I found this. Granny's on safari?
Yeah.
Can you tell me more about what this is?
Yeah, so, okay, so this was, what, 2009, 10? Something like that. I think I was like 20, maybe 20, 21. And I was studying photography.
Where were you studying?
In Minneapolis. There's a community tech school. Oh, so I was studying digital photography. And then I ended up dropping out my last semester because it was like a portfolio and an internship class that they needed you. So I was like, internship class, I need to pay a school to work for someone for free. This seems, for photography, you know.
Someone's
like,
making money off of this. What's going on?
And that just seems stupid. So I dropped out and then I went and I moved to India. So I was in India for like half a year, a little more.
Mm-hmm.
And I met these women, I think with family friends or something. And I was shooting and we kind of connected and then they hired me later on to go to do the Trans-Siberian Railroad. And it was these grannies on safari, these two elderly women that just traveled around and kind of was like, it wasn't the most exciting show. Actually, the one we did never aired because I think they were doing it and then they would like sell it in like PBS or something. And they had a lot of they had, like sponsors and people. So I got some luggage out of it and never actually got paid. but I did lose my appendix halfway through.
Tell me more about this.
The Trans-Siberian Railroad. So it's like a luxury rail cars that go from Moscow to Beijing.
Oh wow!
So okay. I don't know exactly like all their stipulations, but so we were doing that, and then on the Mongolian border, my stomach was acting up.
Oh no!
There was a part where the grannies and the rest of the like it was a small crew, but the cameraman. I was hired as a photographer and like a boom guy, and I was on the train to do a sunset shoot. To like wake up. So I was one of the only people and I remember just waking up at night and my stomach was just in knots and I just could not do anything. It was horrible. And each rail car had like, it was kind of like a Russian grandmother, like take care of each train car who didn't really speak any English. And so I was trying to communicate and then she started feeding me like charcoal or like carbon tablets or something.
Okay.
I don't know why, but then I was like throwing all of that up.
Yep.
And I think it was kind of a like, we'll get the poison out. Exactly. Here's some poison.
That's how it is. Yeah, yeah.
And so I'm like, yeah, I trust. Yeah. So I'm just sitting there like puking my brains out. I think finally, I don't know. I think it was maybe early morning. We do this little shoot. I get some sunset or some sunrise photos. And then there was some doctor and she's like poking my stomach and it's like left side. No, that doesn't hurt. Or like right side. I'm like, yeah, that really hurts. She's like, oh, your appendix is like about to burst.
Gosh.
So they, you know, they dragged me out, bring me to a hospital. This is, it's Ulan Ude and Ulan Batar. I was on the Russian side. I think that's Ulan-Ude? I don't remember. We go to this hospital. It is just like all cement. It's super old. There's, you know, no one speaks any English in the entire place. We had someone with us that could translate. Mm-hmm. And they were like, yeah, we're going to, you know, we got to take your appendix out. And I was like, woo. and so, I mean, to go from like tummy ache to like major surgery in a foreign country was kind of wild. So, but what was interesting is that like you kind of have the weird response. So I was just cracking jokes and I was like, oh yeah, like we're going to cut me open, this and that. And I get my dad on the phone and he starts asking questions like, you know, what do they know, this and that. And like as soon as I heard his voice, I just like broke down crying. I just,
because it became reality.
And it was just like, and I had, it was like, you know, like, father. And he was asking these questions. We like kind of putting him on. He was, you know, trying to understand the situation. And I was just like that, like, you know, it was like that armor came off and I was just bawling after that. Mm. And we finally figured out like, yeah, like we got to operate now. So I go into, I mean, it feels so, it was such an old school place. And I go into another room and they like, I strip down to like, you know, like the bibs, mm-hmm, you're naked. Mm-hmm. And another, this like Russian nurse, I mean, like, everyone's Russian there, right? It's Russia. So she rips my whole thing off. I'm just buck naked. And she basically mops me with iodine. So you can imagine.
Oh my God.
So I'm getting like mopped with iodine with, then there's no context. There's no like, hey, it's just like, you know, and I know it's iodine because we used to put it in our water, you know, like, otherwise I'm like, what is this thing? So I'm just like covered in this iodine. I go to another room and it's just bare walls and they gas me. The doctor was like so sweet and he just was, you know, kind of calming Darren, you know, and like gassing me. And then the next thing I remember, like woke up halfway through it and I can look down and there was like, I could see some blood and I could see like a sheet. And then I just hear him go, Darren. And it felt like there's something, probably tubes, something in my mouth.
Uh-huh.
And then I just get gassed again. And then I wake up in like a room and I like can't
stand
up.
What was the alarming tone? Why was do you know?
No, I don't know. I think I just woke up from
the anesthetic.
Yeah. And so he was just kind of like, he was holding my head. He goes, Darren. He was like trying to calm me down. And then they gassed me again. And then I woke up, you know, in like a lumpy bed and I couldn't stand up. And then another nurse came in a while later with a big syringe and I was like, no. And I don't know why I was freaking out. I think it was morphine, but I was like, no. And then time just kind of slowed. But
how long were you in the hospital?
Maybe five, six days.
Did the whole cast, I would hope they stuck around. And like,
there was one of the producers. She stuck around. So yeah, I mean, you could see, and you can't, hole. So it wasn't laparoscopic. They really cut me open. Honestly, the biggest regret I have is that no one got my camera gear because then I was just in this hospital, again, without any, like, there was no one else that really spoke any English.
Right, right.
And just kind of, when I could walk, I'd meander, and one guy was like, America, you know, there was like a little bit, but.
How old were you, by the way?
I was 22, I was 23, I think, And, but yeah, the biggest regret is like, I have a few pictures from my phone, but I wish I would have. It was like a perfect opportunity. It was like, I have those moments. I don't know if you, because when you do music, like,
yeah,
I have
photos.
Memories of what I wish I would have taken. I don't know if you ever, like if that's the same thing.
I completely understand what you mean. Luckily, with technology now, we got, like, voice memos.
Yeah. So you're like, so what was that?
I can record some dumbass acoustic demo in my living room, but that's so profound.
Mm.
Because what I, beyond what could be a very disorienting moment, being in a Russian hospital.
Yeah.
You are still looking out for the perfect shot. So that says something about you, something I think very shrewd. When did you know that capturing things visually was a calling for you? Because I've seen some self-portraits that you've done were spectacular. You've done band photos, lots of brand photos and stuff, but this must have happened somewhere that you knew that was something you were talented in, or at least that you liked.
Yeah, well, it's funny how it's like how you develop those things. So, you know, I was like 13, I was a little skateboard kid, not good at it. And so it's like, well, what do you do when you aren't good at something? Like you teach or you record or something. Uh-huh. So I bought a camera. It was a Canon Rebel. It was the original Rebel.
Yeah.
I almost got scammed buying it. And then, you know, someone at Western Union was really nice to me. And so I finally got this camera after some time. And then it was like, I thought I was going to shoot skateboarding pictures. And it just ended up not being super exciting to me. And from at that was kind of a point where I was going from being like kind of a little video game nerdy kid to then going to this Boundary Waters camp. So Boundary Waters is like the between Canada and Minnesota. We have 10,000 lakes there. We paddle, we portage canoes back and forth. Beautiful wilderness. And so I started going up there and I had a photography book, Brian Peterson. It was Understanding Exposure, is this like very basic photography book. And I slowly just started learning how to use this camera, taking off auto and like really loving that. And of course, like you look back and I have some of the photos and they're not that good because like nature, I think, is a really hard thing to capture. It's like you have to be there, the perfect light and understand it. And but then I kind of slowly got like started understanding cameras better and worked and like learned from some photographers and did that through high school. And that was kind of came about it.
Which is there, because you're, when you talk about people that are captured, whether it's an audio engineer or,
yeah.
or a photographer, they're adjacent to the art. But bear in mind that there is an art in capturing things and
yeah.
the audio and visual alike. But were you ever someone that created the art? Did you paint? Did you sing? Did you play guitar, piano, any of those things?
No, I didn't. I was never never good at that.
I was never good.
I was so bad when I was a bar manager. I remember I was doing inventory or something and I was tapping my foot listening to music and the owner is a drummer and he's like, you have to stop. He's like, you're driving me crazy. You're so off.
Because it's off beat.
Yeah, and I was like, oh, yeah. So this was something, I forget where I heard this, but it stuck with me for so long, is that within, especially photography, but within art, there's kind of the window versus mirror theory. Have you ever heard anything?
No, tell me.
The idea is like, and it is, you're kind of within that art. Like, so for me as a photographer, like I am a window photographer. I look, I capture, I want to I'm not as much.
Voyeur? Is that a good word for it?
Yeah. There's parts, or there's like, I'm seeing something in a way and I want to like capture that piece, that moment, whatever, compared to like the mirror, like inside me, like I have an idea for a thing. I need to find a way to create that.
I see.
And I think that a lot of multimedia people are great where they're like, I can use paint, I can use this, I can use a camera, where it's much more that like I have something with inside of me that needs to come out.
Yes.
I'm more like, I see you and I see something about you and I want to capture that. So that, like,
I love that.
I think that there's a big, and I think we can be both, but I'm much more of that more documentary, that more like I see you and I want to, like, there's something about it, not so much I have an idea, like I want to cover you in blood upside down and this and that, like, and like document it with this. It's more of a collaborating and seeking like outside pieces. So I think that there's different pieces.
I love that because that's very clear to me, those two distinctions of the mirror and
Do you think, as like, you know, in the art that you do,
it's specific? Weird. I get an image in my head.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm like, I gotta go.
You have to bring it outside.
That's
so
right.
You're much more of a mirror. So you're reflect in, and then I have to showcase. Cool. It's interesting to see, to think through that lens of like, okay, so
both are so equally valid, right? And I would say that I'll hear something or over the years I've wrote songs while I slept, and they seldom make it to when I wake up. You have to be in a really, really good place to kind of tap into that dream as you're just starting to kind of emerge from slumber. And when I go and I'm like, oh, I remember the vocal line. There's no lyrics, but I remember the vocal line. I remember the guitar.
Yeah.
And I go pick the guitar up and everything. And I'm like, this is fine. It's never great.
Yeah.
But it's nice to like be able to tap into the thing from what is subconscious, unconscious sleep to reality.
Yeah.
As a visual person, of course, when you learn, so whether it was school, when you were studying photography or multimedia or whatnot in Minneapolis, I think.
Yeah.
Do you learn best by hearing? Do you learn best by seeing? I've got my theory as to which of, but.
For me, it's doing. Because like I was a horrible student. I went to an alternative school as a charter school in St. Paul. And, you know, the way that I don't think I would have made it in the like the standard type of high school. For me, what really works is like finding someone smarter than me and working with them and then being able to ask like, you know, and insane questions and stuff. Actually, one of the guys that I was a barback for and at a really cool bar in Minneapolis, Marvel, rest in peace, Marvel. Okay. But he just sent me a message saying, because he's a dad now, and saying, he's like, I'm ready for it because of, you know, all the questions he used to ask. Because to me, it's like with photography, I was able to, because my parents are importers, so they hired a photographer to shoot e-commerce. Mm-hmm. It was like white background, pretty boring kind of photography. But what I saw is like, I saw lighting, I saw strobes. I was like, how did that flash pops? How do you get the flash to pop? Oh, you use wireless triggers. Okay. And then it's like, and why do you use those versus constant lights and all these things? So I was able to just ask those questions, and then that built more research, and then I could ask better questions. And, you know, I think the same realm with, I credit all the people that are smarter, better than me, that took the time to spend time with me, for all the, you know, the ways that I've gained knowledge.
When you say you gain by doing, which I completely understand, I'm an oral learner, right? Mm. Like, so if I hear a thing, that's the thing is that, I mean, this is going to be a brief tangent.
This
happened the other night when I was at Treasury. met this. I remember the people that I meet, because people are very, very important to me. Not because of what they can do for me, but because I really appreciate people. Everybody's got a story. They're intricate. They're endlessly interesting to me. And this one guy who will remain nameless, I've met him like 6 times. And he looks at me, he's like, hey, nice to meet you. And in my head, I'm like, yeah, we met. And I just like turn the other way. Because I'm like, dude, after so many times.
Yeah.
But that's because of the aural bit, right? So you say your name, I ask, I remember it.
Yeah.
But for you doing, it's got to be a kind of a tactile thing with your hands.
Well, this is the funny part, because like brand ambassador, like, you know, I think most of the job, people should like you. You have to remember names.
Sure, sure.
So you say your name, I forget it. But so what I do is, like, you say your name, then I write it down in a notes app for every single bar, and I put a little descriptor.
Oh, that's
and then I reference that. And so it's like, and it's like trying to take the time to remember and do those things, or like a note. And so it is, it's that, like,
but for me, it's like, oh, where are you from?
Yeah.
And then you say, let's say, well, you Minneapolis in this case, right? Yeah. Which, if I recall correctly, you can certainly correct me, I believe Husker Du is from Minnesota.
Yeah, that sounds right.
Same with the replacements.
Yep.
So then I go, and that's how I file it.
Yeah.
It's like, oh yeah, and there's movies that were filmed that. So that's like kind of my way. But did you find that by doing the tactile nature of it, I think maybe that's a component of it, right? That
you're
using your hands, that made you a better bartender?
I think that photography and bartending have a lot in common. I think that there's, especially with some, I mean, all art has a lot of like technical mastery.
Yes.
I think that with bartending and with photography, there's both tools you have to like learn. Mm. And then that breeds in like a whole nother realm. Like the more ways you know how to like make a drink, if it's like from shaking, stirring, and like, and then beyond using liquid nitrogen, all these things, like you can get different flavors and you can do a thing. And the more with photography, once you are able to control your shutter speed, your aperture, and like the basics of shooting in manual, then you start learning like lighting, and you learn a lot more of these technical things, you can accomplish more.
Mm.
So if you're like, I mean, and you're still like that, like, okay, how do I get this flavor?
Right.
So if I have more tools at my disposal, they might not be the right tools, but then you can find that piece. And so I always like that. And I think that there's also something about being able to talk and do something with your hands, and, you know, it's that same.
Absolutely, because you're like, when you control a set when you're doing photography, it's putting people at ease as well.
Yeah, I think it's same with bartending too.
It's just
why are you paying $16 for a drink? Well, it's not the drink. It's all right.
It's
like let's schmooze. Let's do the thing.
Uh-huh.
And if I can do that, and I already know how to like hit that drink, and I can build an aviation while talking to you, I'm not thinking about it. Well, that's a much better experience because we can do both. So if I'm not like fiddling with my camera controls, you know, I think bartending and like photography could just turn into a technical exercise when it should be more, it should be an emotional piece.
That's right.
Yeah, there's another photographer, Corey. He goes by Corey Photo. He has amazing YouTube videos and things. Mm. He worked for Platon. He's a really famous portrait photographer. Actually, he's in the Netflix. There's a thing on Platon on design. There's
Like
the whole little design thing. But I watched his videos during COVID, and like so many of his pieces like resonate with me on that. Like learning the functions of your camera, so much so that because then the camera's not there, then it's people, and you already, you know, like right now, if this, if you're fiddling with your levels and doing it, I mean, I see like you're checking, but like, yeah, if you had to like constantly tweak.
Wait, you're looking at me check?
But you know, that would take it out of the moment, the experience. But yes, if you're like, we're constantly having to adjust, but you know your equipment and you do this. So that it's I feel it exactly the same.
What, so the thing about technology, and which I will ask you in a moment, that so I've been recording stuff, bands, myself, like shit since the 90s.
Yeah.
So I started with tape. I'm not that old, but I started at a young age. And so I've seen tape, I've seen mini disc, I've seen 8-track, I've seen Pro Tool, like Auto-Tune, all of it, right?
Yeah.
And I embrace it. The changes in that technology have really, really been able to help technology now in this moment not be a barrier to creation. And so when you say that the camera is an extension of you, I interpret it as quickly as you can get an idea out or capture an idea, that the technology never is an obstacle.
Mm.
That is the purest form of creation. It's like I can write it, like if we sat here for 4 hours, get some coffee, some whiskey, and like, let's write a song. We could go do it because the technology is no longer a barrier to creativity.
Yeah.
Right? And so like now that technology has come so far with, because what are you shooting on now?
Let me just take my shirt.
Yeah, of course.
Right now I have a few different cameras, but the main ones, I have two Canon R6s.
Canon. I love Canon. So that's what I've got. Yeah. How do you feel about mirrorless? Are these DSLRs or?
No, these are mirrorless. I just made the switch.
They're so much lighter, right?
They're lighter. The autofocus is better.
It's great quality.
It's a different, it's just you get used, it's like something you get used to.
Mm-hmm. But they're not a barrier for you to create anymore because you know the hardware so well, right?
Yeah, because I've been shooting shooting Canon forever. So I have some smaller Fujis and then like a small Ricoh, like a more like kind of point and shoot style camera.
Yeah.
I think that a lot of cameras, like, I don't really think one's really better than the other.
No, right.
It's almost like different dialects where like when I was switching, and that kind of like the others, I know like the Sony's, like they just didn't feel as right in my hand because I wasn't used to it. And with these, like I can just dance. Ooh, I want to try to have some angels.
Of course we're drinking.
But it's just like, I can just dance, and I don't think it's necessarily that they're like, and I think all cameras are like really like good.
Yeah. And I mean, they're especially the quality now for the price. I mean, I'm going to ask you in this, I don't think this is an esoteric photographer. She was often, or actually always, the center of her own portraits. A woman named Cindy Sherman. Do you know Cindy Sherman?
That name sounds really familiar. I can't think.
Really amazing. And she's the one that kind of was doing selfies many, many years ago in different kinds of outfits and things. But do you like taking pictures of yourself? I see few of them.
Do I like it? Sometimes.
Yeah, like to maybe put on a role, to put on an aesthetic.
I think I do it. I do self-portraits every so often. And I think part of it is remembering, like I want to know what the feeling is, the uncertain, like the uncomfortableness being in front of a camera.
Oh, I love that. Yeah.
And you know, it's kind of the like, you know,
it's empathy in a way.
Yeah.
Because that's your
subject.
Like
you should tase yourself. You're going to carry that thing.
That's right.
but and to be that, and it's even less than the uncomfortability because I'm by myself.
Right.
But I enjoy it. I like to, I kind of can see, you can see critically what they look like. You can play around. I think to me a big part, and a lot of things I talk about when I shoot portraits, is like it's okay to be vain.
Yes.
Like I think vanity can be a negative word, but it's like, no, we dress up. We, you know, like the whole reason that we wear the things we wear and we do it is the vanity, and it's okay to want to look good.
Right.
It's okay to like not to like actually be the best version of yourself and to try to be the best version of yourself in front of a camera, because why wouldn't you?
Yeah.
So to like, well, then why wouldn't I try to do that myself?
Do you find, I always want to talk about inspiration, kind of inspirations, but there's something that must exist, I think, for photographers as well as record producers, as I've done many, many times. You have to put people at ease.
Yeah.
Do you feel naturally, I mean, I feel like you have that quality, but do you feel that you have that ability to disarm people, encourage them to be natural and not judge them?
Yeah, I think that that is like a skill that I'm constantly learning. Mm. And it's one of those that's like, once you kind of get to a point, then it's, then I'll watch other, like, you know, like photographers at the, that are at the height of their level. And it's like, whoa. And I don't know anything. Mm. And I think that some of the things that I like doing, it's like, again, being really quick with my, I'm really quick with my camera. Mm. So when we're out at bars and doing things, like, I want to capture that. And then just being super goofy and like trying to get past that little point. So it's either that coaching where you're like kind of like this, where it's like that one-on-one, or if it's just in a bar, it's just like cracking jokes, making fun of yourself, doing those things. So yeah, I feel like I feel good at it. I also feel like I am not at all and have so much more to learn. But I think it's
great.
I think that when you get to that, you get to a point where it's like, okay, you know nothing, and then you know, and then you're like, actually, I do know a decent amount. I actually know nothing. You know that
the so. More you know, the more that you don't know.
Yeah.
And I love that. In terms of inspiration aesthetically, do you actively seek art, the consumption of art, whether it's movies or music or going to a museum, to reframe or to inspire you on new ways to capture your subject?
Yeah, I like movies. I like going through, it's like kind of go like watching a movie and then kind of going through dissecting it and understanding a bit more on the technical side. The yeah, museum, I mean, I feel like it's kind of a mix of a bit. You know, I went to the Blanton, which was really fun, and going through, and then when I was in New York, I actually got to go to, it was like, it was weird. It was like one of my first like going to see a whole bunch of photography exhibits, and then seeing some in MoMA. And yeah, it was really, I mean, it was like really inspirational. It feels like that. Oh yeah, you know, it's like you can, like it's all there. It's available.
It's crazy how accessible all that art is.
But also, so is like everything's accessible. So
well,
then
good
you
point.
Forget, you know. So then it's like, well, yeah, delete some apps, and you know, I think that it's a good reminder, and because. It's interesting how things change into that instant gratification piece, which we're all, you know, so it's like, well, yeah, I actually am much more gratified to remember that museum visit, but what are you doing? You're dicking around.
It's tough. Had you seen, well, there's a particular thing that occurs to me that I don't know if you've seen Poor Things, which is Yorgos Lanthimos. That part I don't expect you to understand because I'm fucking whatever, film person or whatever. But Emma Stone won best.
Oh yeah, no.
So when we talk about visual structure, visual mechanisms, and all of that, it moved me a lot. And seldom do I see a movie or a piece of art that immediately I'm like, "This is classic."
Yeah,
and it borrows from the past, of course. But has there been anything lately that you've seen or heard, even music, art, movie that you're thinking, oh shit, this is actually going to maybe spark something in me?
That's a good question.
It's a tough one though, too, because that presumes that you listen in that way or that you look in that way.
Yeah, I mean, well, I saw Dune in IMAX.
Dune 2, the second one?
Yeah, and it was to me, like that was like a movie that I think it was done so well, and it brought you into that whole world. You know, like rewatching the first one. I mean, it was very cool that the most popular thing was so good, because that feels like it's been a while. Where like you see something, you're like, this is the most popular thing happening right now, and it deserves to be like the world building and the way that they shot it, and it, you know, and they say like. Didn't let technology run it, and it wasn't all green screen.
Right.
It had an authenticity to it. So like those things actually do feel.
Oh, I love that.
Those feel great. So that was really fun, because it does feel like a lot of when you do rely on the technology too much, then it ends up being it's not as much feeling, I guess.
I think you're right. Whether it's compression or auto-tune,
right? Yeah.
It strips some of the raw emotion. And I do love what you say about Dune 2. Now, I saw Dune 1, and Denis Villeneuve, I love as a filmmaker, aesthetically, is maybe one of the most, since Fritz Lang, probably one of the most powerful visual filmmakers, you know. But I'm going to make this, because I've been thinking about posting a meme about this, because I've got these dumb memes that I post, right? But I feel like, and this isn't to distill people down to simply, this is not the point, but there's Dune 2 people, or there's a new movie called Late Night with the Devil that's achieved wonderful independent success as a movie. And then there is Marvel people, right? Mm. And I'm not saying you can't be both.
Yeah.
But I love that there's the pursuit of art that's people are craving something independent, something original, while at the same time being fed Marvel things. Now, I'm not an expert in Marvel. I don't care about that. But the point is that it's cool that something so artistic and so world building is popular.
Yeah.
It feels kind of nice.
And it's also a fun, it's like a throwback. You're like, oh, it's Star Wars. You're like, well, actually, you know, that, and then you start, and it's like, and you like learn like, oh, well, actually Star Wars borrowed a lot. And
oh, of course.
Borrowed. And yeah. It's cool to just see all those pieces. Cause yeah, I think about Dune much differently than I don't think about like a Marvel, like,
yeah.
Or I enjoy it in a different way.
Well, and the acting power is massive, right? No, I love Marvel folks. It's not.
It's I feel like there's kind of different realms of
But I do feel like we get kind of rallied on one side or the other, you know. And again, it's not polar; you can do both. But the fact that Dune 2 would be, I think, when it opened, the number one movie in America says a lot.
Yeah,
not an easy plot to understand. Not an easy metaphor to understand about extraction and exploitation of land and stuff like that.
Yeah. And I think it's one that, I mean, when you look at like a lot of the Marvel movies, I mean, it does feel like they're just, it's like propaganda for the art.
Yes.
You know, and there's a part that's like, well, we could argue, but it doesn't mean I don't enjoy them. But yeah, it's like, dude, like the fact that they're like, there's no heroes. It does have a different like feeling towards it.
It's a different thing. And it's becoming an era for horror movies, which I love because those are always the punk rock of movies.
You know what's funny? I'm so not a horror person. Because it doesn't raise my adrenaline the way that I like. It was just an interesting, like, I never got into horror as a genre, because that's not how I want to feel when I go to movies. Because it doesn't make me feel, I guess, the way that I'm sure it makes you, like, it gives you feeling.
It gives me a thing. I don't know what the thing is, but I do feel it's part of a movement, subversive, punk rock, hardcore, kind of where I kind of grew up. Well, so are you talking, as we shift gears here, everybody knows what you're up to next, yeah?
Yeah, yeah. So right now, big, kind of a lot of life changes, but I'm leaving Austin. To be determined exactly when. I just got a new job, so I'm working for doing like beverage operations for team for Patron, which is really exciting.
Coachella's on the you meant to
I mean this job is like a week and a half old, and so it's like training wheels off, just getting, you know, doing thousands and thousands of cocktails, and it's like to me, like, you know, that when you talk about like cocktails and like the I feel like there's a whole realm of, as a bartender and stuff, where you start learning what a Negroni is. You're like, oh, what, the Chinar? Oh, it's Amari. And you know, then it's like, you learn and learn, and then it's like, can I just have a beer and a shot? And you feel like there's like that whole curve.
Sure.
And I feel like in my cocktail journey, it's like where you work with places where you make everything and it's all macerated. And now it's like, I want to see how you make like 3,000 drinks taste exactly the same and taste good. Then, you know, that's a much different margarita than just make a margarita.
So in a way, to just bring it parallel to photography or to print work, it's moving from that creative period, not to say Warhol wasn't creative, but to his prototypical Xerox copy kind of thing, right? Because it's got to be the same thing every time.
Yeah.
But you've got to manufacture and you've got to commoditize, in a sense, art. And this sense, it's really just manufacturing something that's the same every time.
Yeah.
3,000 times. And this, the new role with Patron, does it also involve a bit of media and or content creation as well? Or
not specifically, but I mean, I don't think, none of my jobs really have. It's always just been kind of a big bonus.
Yeah.
Yeah. So like when we'd go do, you know, like when I was, the reason why I moved into New York is like, it was like I did New York Food and Wine again this year. It's funny seeing some Austin people, like, where it's like, I only end up seeing them more outside of Austin. but it was like that capturing friends, doing that thing. Like it's an extra, but it is like, it's the part that is really fun. You may, I think you make a really deep connection when you can do that, I mean, you're showing, I feel like you're showing a value, you're being able to give something. Mm-hmm. It's like a pretty fun gift to capture a good photo of someone. And so to me, it's just like always a bonus.
Adds a value, and then you get to still inject some of your passion into it. Not that this that your creation of cocktails is not a passion. It felt like a really beautiful kind of convergence of your talents in the role.
Yeah.
I do got a couple questions left for you, but one, moving to New York, could you be further away from Trails?
I think we're closer.
Is that right?
Okay, so from right here, we're in Austin, Texas.
Yeah.
Like, what's really cool to go do? And it gets in my head, if I'm driving like 3, 4, 5 hours, like Big Ben's, awesome, amazing.
Yeah, but six and a half hours. Yeah.
There's good mountain biking. There's like good climbing. There's like, I'm also, so like when I was, I don't know if you found like the hiking sucks stuff I did. You know, like hiking itself, I think it's boring. through hiking, really fun. It's exciting. Yeah. But in New York, like a few hours away, you can get to the mountains. You can get to like the Whites, the mm-hmm. White Mountains. You can get to, so I think
White Plains, I guess.
The White Mountains. Okay. So there's like all the presidential mountains up, like Mount Washington.
Okay. And,
but on the East Coast, like you can drive halfway through Texas, and that's like 5 states on the East Coast. So right. I think we're gonna be closer, because there's a lot of parts that in Austin that like I wouldn't wake up and go hiking.
Yeah.
I go mountain biking or something a little that feeds me a bit more. But if I was closer to mountains, I would want to go do mountains, because I think that's a different feeling than, I don't know, than just going for a walk.
And you're the one that would be able to tell me. I skied a bit, but that is the extent of my exploration of mountains and trails and all of that. So two questions left. One, and I'm trying to think about how to frame this for you specifically, Darren, but like, you listen to music a bit?
Yeah, I feel like I'm a casual music person.
Is that right? What do you consume most? Film? Do you read more?
I like film. I feel like it's just all a big mix. I think I can kind of nerd out on specific things, but it feels like more of a casual, like in my brain, I feel like you have things right at the forefront of like what you like and what you do. To me, it's just more of the more general, there's
amalgam.
A lot of feel. Yeah. And it's the same reason, like, if you were to be like, yeah, like throw some, like put some music on or something, like, ugh. Like I don't want to DJ a party.
Oh, shit. Okay. This is great.
Because like that's not how my brain can pull information. Like, it's like, I know the songs and things, but like, I don't really, I worked at a dueling piano bar for years as an early bartender, barback. So it's like, I could sing along to the songs. I have no idea who actually like sings them.
And this is good to know.
You know? That.
So yeah, I completely understand. See, I taxonomize directors, actors. And so like, that's how my mind works. All right. So this is going to be a little different. I've never asked the question this particular way, but through your travels and through your hiking and through all the places that you've been, you can sip any spirit. Doesn't matter which one, whether it's the Patronimos or whether it's the Angel's Envy. But what is a beautiful place that you've been and seen that you would love to sit there in silence and drink spirit and just overlook it? Because normally, this is the first time I've asked the question this way, because I ask it always in a different way, but I feel like...
Are you thinking like a place I've been or a place I would want to?
You tell me.
Well, because there's a lot of spirits and like the things that there's like a specificity to a kind of a spirit.
How about a whiskey and a bourbon then?
But so I'm looking, Calvados is like very much, and I think that I see the DuPont. Yeah. I would love, like, and I want to go to Normandy. I've been through France, but I haven't been to Normandy. And there was a vintage, I worked at one bar where they were like, we're gonna be the brandy bar. So we learned and got to taste the cool things. There was a 1989, it was a single vintage, it was a 25 year aged DuPont. And it was only like 100 and something bucks a bottle. And I tried that. I was like, this is one of the coolest things. It was like old green apple and it was so cool. And I think there's a little pear in there too.
Yeah.
And it was just like so specific and cool that, and then there's the emotional piece where then I bought that bottle. It was my buddy's wedding. His we're there drinking and his dad is like, no, I don't drink. We're like, we'll try this. He's like, we killed that bottle.
Yeah, of course.
And it was just, so I would want to go to like like Domaine du Pont. I'd want to try that.
Because
like,
I got a story for you when I went there.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, please.
And then they let me up into the Rick House, which that's not what they call it up there. I love this. Love Calvados. And this is 1974, mind you. Cast strength. Anyway, not the point. Because you're talking about 8 a.m. This is not a pissing contest.
No, but I would love to hear it.
Yeah. And we'll talk about it more. With all the work that you've done visually, obviously you've been behind speakeasies, fast bars, beer bar, like all of it in Minneapolis and working with brands here. Do you ever see the totality of your work visually, the photos? Do you ever see them becoming something tangible, a book, a memoir, something that as you get older, perhaps?
Yeah, I mean, I hope so.
Your life.
Because it is like it's like the shoot and shoot and shoot. You know, it's like, I feel it's like 10, I think I'm up to like 30,000 photos for it or something in the last few months. But yeah, to have them printed. When we opened this restaurant, Martina, it was an Argentinian restaurant, there still is, in Minneapolis. And I had my little camera and I was shooting during all the trainings and we printed all these things in black and white. So in the basement, there was all these photos from the opening. And it was just like, after like a year, 2 years later, going down and seeing like all the photos from the opening crew, the opening bartenders. And like, that was so, that just felt so good. And they were still there over by the CO2 tanks. That felt cool. And I've done some for family. I made like some family books for like a weekend when our cousins were here. So we'll see. I've done large prints. I don't know, like a book feels so intense. The editing. I think that there's a part that something like that you need someone else to help. Like you need an editor. And I think that's something where it's finding that. So
I think it's incredibly plausible. You know, you have such a litany and a body of work. Not a lot of people do. I mean, we talk about music, you talk about writing, photography. Not everybody's got the vast array of work and body of work that you do. So it's been a pleasure, man, like to finally get to know you, because we've been, you know, in passing in this out of this industry sometimes. But I'm glad that you're getting this great job.
Thank you.
I'm glad you're going to Coachella. That's fucking great.
So the funny, it's like we're going to almost Coachella because we're doing all the parties for it.
Yeah, right.
Exactly. I was like, are there tickets? Because again, I have no idea what's going on, but I know like we got the thing I got to do. So it's like, oh, we're going to almost Coachella, and it's the. I mean, it's awesome. I'm beyond excited. It is. Yeah. It feels. I'm still in awe of all of it.
It's been a pleasure, and I'm glad that you were in Austin long enough to be able to meet you and have
I feel the same
stuff, man. So thanks so much for sharing the whiskey, and we will talk soon.
Cheers,
man.
Cheers.
Well, there we have it. Darren Comerford, now of Patron Bev Ops. He's left Austin. You know, this is the last interview, maybe the first, maybe the last of his time here in Austin, and he impacted the city so profoundly in what is pretty much a short period of time with the scheme of things. He's kind, he's creative, and he has generated so much photography. It's really, really impressive. So I can't wait to see what kinds of other creative ventures Darren has for us in the future. Thanks so much for chatting with me, Darren. I really appreciate it. And thanks, everybody, for listening to Show to V with Mike G. No matter how bummed you are, I mean really bummed that you found out Steve Albini died today, or on the other side, you're quite excited to be playing a live show with mates that you hadn't played with in over 22 years, please keep dancing.